Good evening, my gorgeous friends out there. You know this is our favorite time of the week, where we can touch you and you can touch us. And you know who I brought along? One of my favorite doctors.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
I'm so glad you're here. And you didn't hang me out to dry. You're always there, so dependable.
I don't know about that, but you've been hanging out enough to dry this week. So.
Well, if you get our emails and our newsletters, you know that we have a special friend that we interview from the other side. And I was thinking about this, and I chose Joseph of Arimathea for many reasons. First of all, we're going to look into his relationship with Yeshua and how he asked the Romans for Yeshua's body after the crucifixion and where they buried him. We're also going to look at things like his tin mines, perhaps, the trade he did with the Romans, and where he took Yeshua as a young man. So we have a great amount of things to discuss tonight, and I'm really looking forward to it. If you're familiar with our calls, or if you're not, you know that Richard tunes into the energy of the person on the other side that we're interviewing. And so what I would like for you to do is connect with those energies if you can, and look into your third eye if you can do that, and see a picture of who you might think, what you might think Joseph of Arimathea looked like. Call his name. And then I'm going to ask Richard to connect with Joseph and tell you what he is feeling. And maybe you can feel it also. Let's hope that you can. Richard?
How I experience Joseph's energy is, firstly, it's quite a powerful energy. Excuse me. And it is heart-centered. But what's interesting about it is that it is very broad. It is kind of like it's all-encompassing. It encompasses love. It encompasses power. And it encompasses wisdom. These are, above all else, the sense I have from his energy. There is, if you will, sitting on top of all of that, what you might consider steadfastness, solidness. There is this little light play. I sense, along with all of those attributes that I spoke of, there was also a playfulness about the man. He knew how to be serious. He knew how to bring forth wisdom, but he also, I sense, knew how to play. Very interesting energy. I'm not sure I recall another one which was quite so, what you might call, rounded. It, as I said, encompasses both the right and the left, and in a sense, back and forth. It is, as I said, heart-centered, but encompassing all these other things. Very interesting energy.
Thank you, Richard. And I suspect that our friend has a message for our listeners.
Let's see if he has something to share. My dear friends, it is an honor to be asked to come forth in this manner. I am not one who would ask to come forth, as some have, but I do feel it a great honor to be asked to come forth and speak with you in this manner, because it is an honor in many ways. It is an honor to be asked to come forth and join these wondrous individuals that are undertaking this work, bringing forth these radio shows in this manner. And it is also an honor to speak with you, in a sense, across time, to speak with you in this time that you are currently present in. And even though I still exist, you might say, in this time, my time spent on earth, of course, was back in the time of Yeshua and my dear daughter Mary Magdalene. And some of you understand this, but many of you perhaps do not. And that is that one of the key aspects, in fact, there were several key aspects of the mission of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene, was indeed to prepare for the time in which you find yourselves. It is not well understood by most of humanity that there have been a great number of changes that have occurred in the human experience as you scan what you call time, the time of the human experience upon the planet. And in referring to the human experience, I also include prior experiences, experiences prior to Atlantis, including Lemuria, where souls were much more ethereal in nature, but I do consider the totality, in a sense, to be what you might call the human experience. And so there have been many transitions that have occurred. Perhaps the most fateful and powerful was what you know of as the fall in Atlantis. And subsequent to that fall, there were those beings that came forth to, you might say, upgrade aspects of the human DNA from those sources that remained upon the planet, such that humanity would be able to be released from this fall when the time came. And whilst those beings undertook the changes they were meant to undertake, they actually undertook other changes also, which in part defeated the work that they had come to do. And so part of the mission of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene was to bring forth a refreshment of the human DNA. And in a sense, the parents of these two also played a role in the preparation of this because of who and what we were. So this was an important part of this unfolding. And you might say the parents and the children chose each other very carefully such that this unfolding could occur. And so there was a great connection between Yeshua's parents and my wife and myself as the parents of Mary Magdalene, because in a sense we represented the genetic, you might consider genetic preparation for these two to be the parents of offspring who would carry forth that change that has subsequently flowed out to all of humanity. And I will take a moment to mention that for the most part, people focus on the genetic aspects of an individual, the genetic stream that comes through from past generations within a family. And I will say to you, the unfolding of the genetic experience of an individual is in fact more complex than this, because the soul particles, the energies and particles sent forth from an individual monad to incarnate actually influence the genetic unfolding, the genetic expression, the power that is expressed through the genetic encoding of that individual's stream. And so there is this interplay which is not at all understood by your current science. And that is why we came forth, the two mothers as aspects of the one that you know of as the high cherubim angel in Ellora, and the two Josephs, the two fathers, myself and Joseph ben Jacob, both aspects of that archangel Sandalphon. And in so doing, we brought forth the power, you could say, that came forth from those monads, especially given the number of soul particles that were sent, to ensure that the necessary preparation from a genetic perspective was in place, so that the empowerment of the genetic coding of Mary Magdalene and Yeshua was in place, and hence the power was present in the genetic encoding of their children. And I will add that there were aspects of both Ellora and Sandalphon that came forth to intermarry into that, you might say, bloodline, especially in the early times, to ensure that this was strengthened and reinforced. So you see, there is a play which was, you might say, played out that humanity, for the most part, has no knowledge of at this point in time. And I have taken the time to spell this out because it is actually a critical process for what is currently unfolding upon your planet. Without that preparatory work that, in a sense, we all played a part in, the unfolding that is currently occurring on the planet could not indeed have occurred. And so I wanted to share that with you for your understanding, because it was, in a sense, something that I was very close to and understood very clearly in my time. Carolyn mentioned that she wished to ask me some questions about my relationship with Yeshua and my role in his journey. As some of you understand, I was very fortunate to have garnered great wealth in my time. I had, from a very young age, gone to Britain to study with the Druids, and this in part led me to make contact with the tin mines in Cornwall. And through this, and also through my first marriage, because I was indeed married twice, my first wife died, and I indeed became quite wealthy through that first marriage. And I took that opportunity to strengthen that wealth through the trading that was available to me through that family relationship, and it enabled me to purchase the tin mines in Cornwall. And so I became a very important figure, you might say, in the Roman Empire at that time, because tin was a very important ingredient for the military activities of Rome at that time. And so I was a key provider and well known to the Romans. And so this gave me great wealth to be able to support the early preparations that Yeshua went through. I was able to take him to Britain and to oversee his few years there in his early teens. I took him there and ensured that he was, you might say, taken care of by relatives. Some of my brothers, or indeed half-brothers, were living in Britain, and so I had them oversee his time there, and I visited from time to time to ensure that he was being taken care of. And some of you will know that he went to Britain at the age of around 13 and stayed there for some 4 years. And so you might say I oversaw that time with the Druids. And I was also able to fund his subsequent journey to Egypt, where he spent some 7 years studying with many great masters in Egypt, in India. So it was his trip to India for some 7 years that I supported. And I mention these things because it is important, firstly, to understand that both Yeshua and Mary Magdalene did not want for anything in financial terms in that time of their lives, and indeed their family lines represented royalty in many ways, on many levels. And so these were not commoners in either case, and they were not in any way lacking, you might say, from a financial perspective. And so it was my honor, privilege, and pleasure to support and to fund those two major journeys in Yeshua's early life. They were key in his development, you might say, in his knowledge and wisdom and understanding. Of course, he was very gifted from a very young age because of who and what he was and the number of soul particles that he carried, as indeed was Mary Magdalene. And yet they were both subject to the disciplines and rigors of the Essenes, who began the education of their children at a very young age, because they recognized that the more one learnt at a young age, the more one was able to grasp and to hold throughout their lifetime by way of mystical and metaphysical skills and also of wisdom and its application in life. And so there were many threads to Yeshua's education, and I will mention that my dear wife, Mary Magdalene's mother, known to you as Mary of Magdala, was indeed one of Yeshua's first key teachers, because some of you will understand that she was indeed the daughter of one of those great magi that came forth at the time of Yeshua's birth. And he brought great wisdom and knowledge to his children, and my wife gathered that knowledge and shared a great deal of that with Yeshua when he was very young. So in a sense, you might say the unfolding of all of this was something of a family affair. Indeed, my mother Anna was also Mother Mary's mother, and those of you that have read Claire Hartsong's first book, entitled Anna, Grandmother of Jesus, you will see there how so much of what unfolded indeed unfolded within her family. It was, you might say, something of a family affair. So I give you that little background, and I hope this helps you to understand some of the threads that were at work in that time. There was a great deal of planning. There was a great deal of understanding that was in place. There were powerful foundations that underpinned Yeshua and Mary Magdalene and their coming forth in that brief, powerful missionary period, that ministry of Yeshua, as it is known. But really, there was so much that went before it. Your history, for the most part, simply talks about those years and his crucifixion, but really there was a powerful platform on which he and Mary Magdalene stood. And so I know you will have many questions. I will simply leave this now in honor of those that participated in that important process.
I want to thank you so much for bringing so much information to our listeners that they were unaware of, the complexity, the relationships with one another. And you have brought forth a great amount of information that I am certain that many are unaware of these great truths. Now, Yeshua is known for many things, and he came to accomplish a great deal. And would you say that one of the main missions of his life was to refresh the DNA of humanity? And if that is not the case, tell us what one of his main missions would have been.
As I indicated earlier, it was indeed an aspect of his mission, not only his mission, but also that of Mary Magdalene, to refresh the human DNA. But more than this, it was important to sow some seeds of understanding. The progression that occurs through the human experience is a complex one. And the thread of recognition of the role of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene at that time through to now was important to preserve. And so, in addition to their children, there was that public ministry, you might say. It was in part fulfilling prophecies, and in part it was creating a powerful force, you might say, within the human experience, such that in some form, in some measure, it would survive down through time to be acknowledged in this time. And those that understand the path that the Roman Catholic Church took, the distortions that it imposed upon the story and the life of Yeshua, are great indeed. But despite those distortions, the knowledge and the understanding that man existed in that time, and on some level and in some form, carried a great truth for humanity, that fundamental element has survived those distortions. Yes, he was painted as being an aspect of God, in a sense, Son of God, and therefore in some manner special, which is not entirely accurate, though I would say every soul is an aspect of God or prime creator or whatever term you wish to use. So in a sense, there is truth to that, but it is not a unique thing. It does not have those flavors that the church has placed upon it. And yet, despite those distortions and the notion that he came forth and died for the sins of humanity, which is a truly gross distortion of what occurred, despite those distortions, his name has survived. And in a sense, he has continued to be revered. And what might seem strange to you is that, in fact, this is actually far more important than the fact that the story has been distorted along the way, because the opportunity will arise for those distortions to be corrected. Yes, there has been a great deal of suffering of humanity that has gone on in the name of the Christian religion on so many continents in so many ways. And yet, even with all of this, all of that simply forms part of the abuse of humanity that has gone on since the fall in Atlantis. It has taken many faces. And so in a sense, that was simply one of the faces that this abuse has taken. And yet despite all of that, the knowledge of this man's life and his existence, it was so important that it traveled down through time. And history does not record that this was one of the driving forces in the steps that Emperor Constantine took to ensure the, you might say, enthronement of the Christian Church as part of the Roman Empire, so it would pass down through time. In a sense, he too was not overly concerned by the distortions, but rather was more concerned that this be a powerful force in the world and survive. And so his role in this is very deeply misunderstood. So there are many threads to this, you might say, role that Yeshua and his spouse Mary Magdalene fulfilled. One was bringing forth their children. The other was, in a sense, this meme, this idea that there was this great unfolding back in that time that came down to this time. And I would say that the skills that, in a sense, Yeshua displayed in his time, walking on water and other miracles, really were miracles that other individuals knew how to do and indeed can do today. You have mentioned, indeed you have brought forth on your radio show, the great Babaji. This man is capable of all of these things and more. And yet he is hidden from public view. Whereas those displays of unusual powers, you might say, by Yeshua have been recorded and held down through this time. It is no accident. It was intended that this be so, because the sustaining of the energy of this meme, this idea, plays a powerful role in the preparation for this time. I cannot usefully describe the detail of this other than to have this be expressed to you in this manner. There are other examples where ideas and objects have been, you might say, preserved in the human experience to come down to this time because they play a role in this unfolding. So perhaps that is enough by way of answer to your question.
I thank you so much for bringing forth knowledge that has been withheld from humanity and to help us focus on the truth. And it is my understanding that Yeshua thought crucifixion might be possible, and he didn't come specifically to die on the cross, but it did happen that he was crucified. Can you give us some insight as to what Yeshua was doing during that time when he lay in the tomb?
Firstly, let me provide a little background to that unfolding, the crucifixion and beyond. Indeed, it was recognized not only by Yeshua, but by those around him, given the skills of the Essenes, including his grandmother Anna. It was recognized by a number of us that it was quite likely that he might suffer a crucifixion. It was not certain, but that possibility was prepared for from a very young age. Some of you will know that his grandmother Anna lived for over 800 years, and for most of that time, she looked about 35 years of age. She had mastered the ability to place her body into a state of suspended animation and indeed leave her physical body in that state for even a generation in time. She might disappear for 30 or 40 years of your time experience. And there were those who preserved and protected her physical body during that time. And then she would return and continue on with life. And things were prepared such that she could come and go in that manner without creating what you might consider too much disruption or surprise amongst people. I mention this because she carried great skills in this regard, skills that perhaps she mastered better than many others. Some of these skills she gathered from her time in Egypt. And so these skills are part of what she was responsible for teaching to Yeshua. And it was these skills, the ability to still the physical form completely, as if it were dead, you might say. It is part of what he utilized whilst he was hanging on the cross. And humanity in general does not understand this. And so his vital signs were stilled. And so, in truth, he was not dead, and as history records, I petitioned for him to be brought down from the cross early because his vital signs had been stopped, and this was accepted by those in power, you might say. And so we were able to bring him down from the cross in that state, in a very, you might recognize, physically damaged state, and begin the healing work that was necessary. And during those 3 days in the tomb, Yeshua, in his spirit form, you might say, did not return to his physical body until towards the end. Again, this is very similar to the skills that his grandmother Anna demonstrated many times over her long life. And whilst he was away from his body, he undertook some key work which was part of his mission, and that was to reconnect the energetic lines, you might say, the energetic connections between this dimension and the higher dimension, what you might term the fifth dimension or the angelic dimension. Connections which had been broken by the fall and needed to be repaired for the unfolding of the changes which are currently getting underway in your time, in your dimension, in your human experience. And so he understood that this work needed to be undertaken at some point. And so he saw this as being an opportunity in which to undertake this work whilst his body was undertaking some healing work and whilst he was, in a sense, forced by the experience of the crucifixion to leave his physical body in the manner I have described. And so he took the opportunity to undertake this work. And as he undertook this work and as he began to return to the body, the energies involved with that work were tremendous indeed. And so as he began to return to his physical body, it led to this imprinting of his physical image upon the shroud that covered his body. And this indeed is that shroud that you know of as the Shroud of Turin. And that imprinting occurred because of the energies with which he was working. He could not, in a sense, leave them behind as he came back into the physical form. It was almost like his body was radioactive, though that really does not express it accurately enough. You might say the energies were such and of a nature that they caused this almost photographic imprinting on the shroud. And so this too, this work that he undertook in the tomb was a key aspect of the mission that he was to undertake. He knew this was work that needed to be done. And so it too was a key aspect of his mission.
Thank you so much. As you know, that was one of the questions I wanted to bring forth about the shroud, and I thank you for that. I'd like to turn the direction towards the tomb itself. It's my understanding that that was a tomb that you had prepared for yourself, and there is a place in Jerusalem called the Garden. Was that the tomb where Yeshua was laid to rest during that period of time?
It is the same tomb. And I would add that part of the preparation for all of this involved a passageway from the tomb, a tunnel, you might say, which gave access to the tomb from within, rather than having to enter through the main entrance, you might say. And so part of that preparation involved that tunnel. That tunnel has been closed in, but if people wish to thoroughly search this out, they will find the evidence of that tunnel leading into that tomb.
I'm assuming that you're bringing this forth so to enlighten us that members close to Yeshua were able to come back and forth and contribute to his healing. Is that accurate?
That is absolutely accurate.
Thank you for that. Now, when Yeshua left the tomb, can you give us a little, some thoughts about the movements of Mary Magdalene and Yeshua himself? We don't have a great deal of information about what happened after that.
It was recognized by all of us that we were all at great risk. It was important that those in power not understand that Yeshua had survived, and so in a sense he had to be very secretive. And as you probably understand, he had learnt the ability whilst in India to teleport. And so he was able to move himself from one place to another and not be seen. It was also important to move the key members of the family out of the area because we were all under threat. There was a great deal of suspicion, you might say, that surrounded what had unfolded. And although Pontius Pilate had indeed been a very close friend and colleague of mine, once things started to change, he was beginning to get pressure from Rome to explain what had happened. And the outcome of all of that was that I was a person wanted, you might say, by the Roman Empire. And the outcome of all of that with time was that all of my property and ships and tin mines and so on were all confiscated. This did not all immediately happen at once, but it happened fairly quickly. And so I arranged for Mother Mary and Mary Magdalene and others to move from this area to move to southern France, where history records that they came ashore there. And the story that is written in Anna's book, where we were cast adrift from Alexandrina and had to, you might say, rely upon the currents and our focused will to get to where we were going, is a very accurate story. Yeshua was not part of that trip, but rather joined us later using the skills that I have just described. I would also add that he carried great wounds as a result of his experience during the crucifixion. And even though a great deal of work was done by very skilled Essene healers, not only his direct family but others, to see these wounds healed, he continued to suffer greatly from this. And so, indeed, the evidence was that there were those beings who worked very hard to ensure that those wounds did not heal, and the outcome of this was that he did not live as long as he otherwise would have done. And so, as I explained, they moved to France. They did travel somewhat elsewhere in the world beyond the crucifixion, but for the most part, they lived in southern France. And the records are there to demonstrate certainly the presence of Mary Magdalene, and indeed with time, the evidence will emerge of the tomb of Yeshua in that area.
Thank you so much. Now, that area in southern France, is it accurate to say that there is, I don't know how to express this, a dimensional entry point? Perhaps you can give me a little information about that. It's my understanding that one can go into other dimensions in that area in southern France. Is that accurate?
It is accurate, and indeed it is something that has been known for a long time by those who have a connection or an interest in such things. Indeed, there are records which confirm that there was in that area a temple of Isis. And so this, in a way, has been a very important area of the world for a long, long time. And so there is an interdimensional portal which can be used by human beings for various purposes, but indeed is also available to your interplanetary friends, you might say, to come and go rather more readily than they might otherwise do in other areas of the world. And it has been used throughout the history of the planet. It is not the only place of this nature, but it is a very important interdimensional portal.
Thank you. There has been some information that has come forth not too long ago that the burial place of Mary Magdalene has been found. Can you give us some insight into that?
There has been a lot of distortion and confusion about all of this. Indeed, the individual who ostensibly located this came forth and said that it was all made up and a fake. But in truth, he came forth to say this to protect himself and his family. Indeed, what he discovered was real, and it was indeed the tomb of Mary Magdalene. But he chose to bury it because the forces arrayed against him were such that he seriously risked not surviving the attempts to publicize that information. And so he has created a lie, you might say, to hide the coming forth of these truths. So the information is indeed accurate, but has been buried, you might say, by the individual responsible for bringing it forth.
Thank you. Was Yeshua ultimately buried in the general area?
Yeshua was buried indeed in that general area.
Will that be discovered?
I anticipate it will come forth quite soon.
Thank you. You have been so generous with your explanations to help us understand because, as you said, there has been so many distortions about the lives of all of these dear people that you love so dearly. Excuse me. What do we have to look forward to, in your opinion, within the next year as far as developments within the human race?
You live in a time of great change. Yes, many of you, and it included the two of you, expected and indeed were told that it would all happen, you might say, very quickly around the December solstice of last year, leading through to the recent equinox of March of this year. And there were reasons why it was put forth in that manner, reasons that have been explained to you. And primarily, it was about, in a sense, laying a false trail for those who would wish to prevent all of this from unfolding. But their efforts, in a sense, were futile because the key steps really were of an energetic nature, and those indeed have occurred. And if you examine what has unfolded in the world since the December solstice, you will see a great deal of evidence of humanity awakening to the controls and abuses that have been in place. I am not saying that humanity in general has begun to awaken, because they have not, but there is a growing base of awareness. People who, in a sense, have been looking for a long time, in many cases, have connected with some fundamental truths and are moving those forward. And so it is important that a sufficient number of humanity awaken to what has happened to them and to begin to look for an alternative before all of this unfolded in a manner that they could grasp. And so you have seen a lot of change in these 3 or now 4 months of time, and you will see this accelerate dramatically in the coming months. The evidence will begin to emerge in the world that confirm these changes, and evidence that cannot be denied, evidence that will be in the face of so many. And it has been necessary to unfold this in a much more careful manner because of the array of forces that would seek to prevent this unfolding, not only upon planet Earth, but indeed beyond it. But I would say to you that the forces beyond the planet have been corralled in many ways, and those upon the planet are seeing their power slip from them because they no longer have the off-planet support that they once had. So this is an unfolding that is well in train. And so I am not here to give you some timeline for the unfolding of this, but I am here to confirm that all that we worked for in our lifetimes, and I include my wife and I and my half-sister and her husband and our offspring and all that came from this, all of this was not in vain. All of this had a purpose in preparing for this time, and all that was prepared for will unfold as intended.
I want to thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and knowledge with us. And I'm sure that all who listen to this will have gained much. You have answered our questions fully and with great integrity, and I thank you so much. Blessed to you. Blessed be. So, I would like to mention now that Richard displays a skill of great import to be able to use the right side of the brain, speak to others on the other side, speak to your body. And I want to thank you, Richard, for bringing this information forth.
Thank you, Carolyn.
I also want to mention that you teach the Right Brain Magic sessions, teaching people how to do what you are displaying tonight, and you are a master at it. I would like for you to mention to our listeners where they can find more information about it, how they can do what you're doing.
Yes, the information about this is on our Right Brain Magic website, just called rightbrainmagic.com. And you can go to that website, you can read a little about what we do, you can listen to examples of people displaying these skills after working with either myself or Carolyn in awakening these skills. Some of the outcomes are truly extraordinary on there, as you'll experience if you have not already been there.
Richard, we have 4 minutes. Is there something that you would like to discuss that we're working on currently?
Well, perhaps the the most absorbing thing we are doing is seeking to end these processes that have been interfering with you and seeking to prevent this whole unfolding. But around all of that has been the key past life sessions that you do, which are truly extraordinary, where some of the lifetimes that individuals have come forth to connect with really have been quite amazing. And of course, the soul origin and history readings that we have been doing, or you particularly have been doing, that bring forth just an amazing profile of the soul history of an individual, and indeed why they are here in this incarnation and how that connects to their past and to what's unfolding in this time. They truly are quite extraordinary journeys that you bring forth in those readings.
Thank you, Richard. We have 2 more minutes. You want to give an example of something that has caught your imagination?
Well, you're putting me on the spot. I think one of the things, and I think I mentioned this before, one of the things that when we send these readings out that I mentioned, the Soul Origin and History readings, which, by the way, you can find on our soulorigin.com website, is the way the individual who receives that reading inevitably connects with that reading. And we send these things out, as I think I've said before, with our hearts in our mouths, wondering if, we screwed it up this time. And inevitably the connection is there. And I've mentioned the experience of a woman recognizing the house that Carolyn described in Atlantis, which she thought was in Greece. But another very interesting one was a woman who had experienced being a soul that was guarding the red crystal from Atlantis. And fascinatingly, Carolyn had the experience some time ago of actually releasing the soul that was guarding that crystal when she visited the Caribbean quite a few years ago. And lo and behold, this individual, when this was shared with them, they had the experience of, as I said, being connected with the soul that had been guarding that red crystal. Again, you can't make this stuff up.
Indeed, you can't. And Richard, I would like to thank you in a special way for coming and doing this work with me. You have been such a delight in sharing this, and you've been a steadfast partner in all that we have done. And I want to thank you in a special way.
Thank you, Carolyn. And I just want to acknowledge the fact that you are here doing this despite what you've been through in the last couple of weeks. And It's quite an achievement.
Thank you, dear. And so all of our friends out there, we wish you pleasant evening, not only for this evening, but the rest of your life. We send our blessings to you and honor you. Good night for now.